Welcome. You're listening to Latin Waves with your hosts, Sylvia and Stuart Richardson. Latin Waves is a syndicated show produced in the studios of CJSF Radio in Burnaby, BC. Latin Waves is more than just hot rhythms. This is a show about community, about creating a culture that is inclusive and based on fairness. Because everyone deserves dignity, respect, and has something to contribute. A new world is possible, and it all starts with us.
Well, what's happening, you know, without our knowledge or without our consent, the public of British Columbia, is that we're being turned into the fossil fuel armpit of the world, the new Saudi Arabia, if you will.
That's the voice of filmmaker Damien Gillis. On this week's show, we speak to Damien Gillis about the provincial government's agenda for the future of British Columbia and what we as citizens can do to reshape our future and why it's critical we pay attention at this moment. So stay tuned.
In our collective history of Canada, we talk about a society that is organized economically around particular instruments, and one of them is trade. We are told that trade agreements are part of our economic base, are part of an integral component of our economic, but we never ask what kind of economic development, what kind of industrialization do we want, and where does this take place? Someone who doesn't take things for granted is Damien Gillis. He is a Vancouver-based documentary filmmaker with a focus on environmental and social justice issues, especially relating to water, energy, and saving Canada's wild salmon. We're very privileged to have him on the show. Thank you so much for joining us, Damien.
Thanks for having me back, Sylvia.
Now, Damien, there's a proposal for a foreign trade zone in Delta. And I wanted to begin by first talking about the economic proposals that this government has put in place so far since their election, and if you could talk in your experience of covering the industrialization of areas like the Delta, what impact this will have on our economy.
Well, I think this is part of this is actually, incidentally, one of the first things I started covering about 4 or 5 years ago when I began to focus on environmental issues in BC was the highway program that this government, and along with participation, the federal government, they're both very closely working together on this creation of Pacific Gateway strategy, which is basically to build a whole bunch of new infrastructure, ostensibly to move goods and vehicles around the lower mainland, and also to open up trade corridors predominantly to access new markets in Asia through places like Prince Rupert, port expansion up there, and a massive expansion of Delta Port and the surrounding lands, which were predominantly either in the agricultural land reserve and or Tsuwassen First Nation traditional territory. And so there was a treaty that was signed a few years ago. I think it's quite clear now that that was designed to expedite the removal of or get around the agricultural land reserve to be able to use that land as part of the land base to industrialize this port for container storage and rail yards and these sorts of things. And it's basically part of a bigger picture here, which is really, you know, fits into the whole globalization scheme and is designed to export Canadian resources and also to channel finished goods from other countries through what we're now hearing about, a foreign trade zone being established in Delta, which basically creates a special area where these goods can move through our country without being without our laws applying to them, and duties and taxes and these sorts of things, environmental regulations, and again also to export our raw materials to other places where other people will do the work to actually turn those into finished goods. So we're exporting jobs with that as well to places where they have lower labor standards and cheaper labor. So we're exporting a tremendous amount of coal out of the Delta port right now to power factories in China that will manufacture these products into finished goods. We're sending our raw logs. We recently have risen to 40% raw log exports in this province. That's predominantly going to China, and that's filling in the gaps from Russia, which has started to clamp down on the export of timber from its Siberian forest to China, recognizing the problems with that. So our government is really, both provincially and federally, moving in a different direction.
as you're talking about this, I was trying to come to terms with what it really means to have a foreign trade zones. I mean, we've talked about foreign trade zones in this program in relation to NAFTA and the trade zones in Latin America where maquilas industries have been predominant. I wonder if you could talk a little bit, though, about the impact that this will have in terms of our local sustainable projects that we as a community, we as a society would like to see develop.
Okay, well, first of all, you know, the characteristics of a foreign trade zone are basically 100% foreign ownership of the facilities and companies that operate within there, paying zero corporate taxes to the Canadian government, and basically the removal of labor standards, being able to import temporary laborers who don't, where Canadian labor laws don't apply, so that's going to have an economic impact on jobs in Canada, and basically also, very importantly, the removal and watering down of environmental standards and the oversight of environmental impacts from these operations. Now, as far as those environmental impacts and also impacts to our economy and our food security, you couldn't imagine, I can't imagine putting this kind of major industrial operation in a worse place. We're talking about the Fraser Estuary, which is an integral part of some of the largest salmon runs in Canada that go through the Fraser River. It's prime orca habitat. You're talking about bringing in large tankers that make a lot of noise that really affect whales. You're talking about a key stopover on the Pacific Flyway where 5 million migratory birds stop by every year, that habitat being destroyed, and the best farmland in Canada that continues to be eroded at a time when we face considerable food security challenges in this province. And what's happening here, it's not just about the port, it's about all the facilities around it that are being really helped by this Tsawwassen First Nation Treaty to be leased back to port operations for all the other elements involved in that. And then it's the roads that are connected to this through the gateway highway strategy, which is tied into this whole Pacific Gateway program, including the South Fraser Perimeter Road, which weaves its way through all sorts of pieces of farmland and what agrologists call this alienation. When you put a road through the middle of a farm and you cut it off and you make it so that the farmers can't move their equipment back and forth easily because it's a big highway with barriers on it, you start to make farming less and less economically feasible, and then people come back and say, well, we need to remove this land from the ALR, we need to repurpose it to industrial use. I interviewed former Premier Mike Harcourt a couple of years ago when I caught him at the Union of BC Municipalities meeting, and this is what I was on my mind, and I asked him about how he felt about the industrialization of Delta and the South Fraser Perimeter Road, and I was really surprised by his response. He admitted to me that he had been on the board of the Vancouver Port Authority, in full disclosure, and he believed this was basically just the natural progression, that Delta, is, in his words, I'm paraphrasing, has really always been sort of the industrial armpit, I guess that's my word, of the Lower Mainland, and that's what it's supposed to be, and that's ignoring the farming heritage, the fishing families along the banks of the Fraser, the pioneer families that built that community, and the incredibly important role it's played in Vancouver's history, or in the region's history, and all that is basically being shoved aside. And this goes back to the origins of the Agricultural Land Reserve, which was brought in essentially for two reasons. Number one, in the aftermath of what happened in Richmond, just across the banks of the Fraser, where 1,000 small farms were basically plowed over in the space of a decade or so, when Richmond City Council rezoned half of the town pretty much from agricultural to residential overnight in the late 50s and early 60s. And so there was that had just happened, and so people who didn't want to see that repeated in Delta, and there was a plan back then, and I think we're just seeing it really come to fruition now, which is basically to industrialize the whole Fraser River banks all the way up to Hope and turn this into a massive superport. And because of the bringing in of the Agricultural Land Reserve, because of the awareness that shifted, I think, in some of these communities over the years and different economic factors, that didn't happen all at once. But I think really it was just really delayed and waylaid a little bit, and that's what we're seeing come to pass now. I think it's a terrible choice that we're making, putting, you know, in foreign corporations' profits ahead of the most important things we have, our salmon, our food security, and our communities.
I just want to focus on something you said. You know, throughout Latin America, we've seen this model enacted and perfected. First, you see the rose come into town, cutting through the agricultural land, as you point out. And eventually, when the agricultural in those areas becomes extremely difficult, you see agribusiness taking over some of the land, and you see the country being set up for an import market where, in the case of El Salvador, we didn't have people starving, but now there is an increased number of people who are dependent on imports for their food when they're an agricultural country. So it is insane. But I wonder if you could talk a little bit about how this connects to decisions that have been made by this government in terms of the sale of BC Rail, the now proposed of removing the agricultural land reserves, and also this mass expansion of extraction for energy within the province.
You've really highlighted some of the key pieces of this puzzle that have just been coming together, you know, one piece at a time over the last number of years. And it's clear that a report from the government that was published by Sean Holman on the Public Eye Online recently, and then a story repeated in larger format by Global Television a few weeks ago. They did a series on this. This has been in the works for a number of years now, and there was a consulting report that was put together in 2006-2007 planning this out. I want to also point out that when you talked about our food security, it's really important for British Columbians to understand that according to our own Ministry of Agriculture in 2006-2007 report, we are now making less than half of our own food, and that number is probably closer to 40% now. So we're very reliant on Mexico and California and Asian imports to subsidize to supplement our food needs. And when we look at droughts and wildfires and all these different conditions that we're seeing around the world, where major grain producers and food producers are having to curb their exports because they need to focus on feeding their own people, we're putting ourselves in a very precarious situation right now in terms of food security. The different pieces that you talked about of the puzzle here, it's really interesting to see how this is all connected, and that's something that I've been working on with people who've been gathering all the different documents, and many of them from Freedom of Information searches, and being passed these things by people behind the scenes that are concerned about this. And it's emerging very clearly that and we saw at the end of the BC Rail, before the BC Bassey-Virk trial was scuttled prematurely, one of the last people to take the stand was involved in the BC Rail, the skeleton of BC Rail that was left over after the sale. And he was questioned about how come these executives in this shell of BC Rail were making hundreds of thousands of dollars in salaries after they pretty much had no assets left. And one of the things he said is that they were tasked to facilitate the Gateway project, and so they were acting, as it appears, as a land purchasing arm for the government to buy and flip land associated with all this reorganization of Delta here. So it really looks like the BC Rail privatization, this Delta Port situation, the Gateway, the highway projects, the South Fraser Perimeter Road, all these things are really part of a master plan. At the high end of the food chain, you've got global corporations, like you say, moving energy resources out of the province, looking to access our trade corridors to move their goods around the world with as little benefit to Canadians as possible. But at the lower level, you have all sorts of pals of the Liberal government who've made a couple million bucks here, a couple million bucks there, picking up a piece of land as a speculator a few years ago, and then selling it back to the government for two or three or four times what they paid. And so everybody's getting a piece of the pie here. It's that's the kind of the grease for the wheels of this whole situation is all these people, friends of the Liberals, who are getting a little piece of the action here to help make this happen. And it's very troubling that it would be good and fine for them, to make a few million bucks here or to to create opportunities for these corporations, but look at what's being lost for the public.
One of the things that you have highlighted in a lot of your reporting is the impact that, you know, the destroying the prime farmland will have, but also the fuel that is being extracted now through fracking and the tar sands. Can you talk a little bit about the impact and why it's important for us to act now?
Well, what's happening, you know, without our knowledge or without our consent, the public of British Columbia, is that we're being turned into the fossil fuel armpit of the world, the new Saudi Arabia, if you will. When you look at the throughput of tar sands bitumen through there now, I'm aware of three different pipeline proposals that are in the works to move each of them about 500,000 barrels of bitumen through British Columbia into tankers on the coast in either Kitimat on the north coast or right through out of Vancouver and Broad Inlet, the Westport Terminal, the end of the Trans Mountain Pipeline, all to move that oil to Asia or down the coast to the United States. And then there's a major natural gas pipeline as well, which is at a fairly advanced stage. It's past all the regulatory hurdles. And what that's going to involve is taking that. It's a pipeline that connects to some other pipelines that come down from the north, northeast, where all this shale gas fracking development is happening, and meets up with a new pipeline that's going to be built, from all indications at this point, called the Kitimat Summit Lake Pipeline, that will take that natural gas from north of Prince George to Kitimat, turn it into liquid natural gas, and put it on giant tankers and ship that to China, where they can get 2 to 3 times as much money for that resource as they can here in the North American market. Simultaneously to that, like I say, there's the Enbridge Northern Gateway pipeline that we've talked about before that runs along a pretty similar route, except it goes all the way to the Alberta tar sands. That would also end in Kitimat and involve putting that oil on tankers and taking it to China through some of the most perilous waters in the world on our north coast, with tremendous ecological and cultural values that would be put at risk. And then in Vancouver, there is an existing pipeline called the Trans Mountain Pipeline, owned by Kinder Morgan, and it currently moves 300,000 barrels a day, and they would like to raise that up to 700,000. And they also have a spur that they've, you know, just came across my radar recently that they're proposing that would break off kind of around Prince George and also go to Kitimat. So if the Enbridge pipeline doesn't go through because of all the opposition that it's facing from First Nations and the public, it's very unpopular. And I don't really believe, if I was a betting man, I would not be betting on the Enbridge pipeline. But it's quite apparent that what they have there are a number of different backups to that. And there is such intense pressure on moving these fossil fuel resources from Alberta and British Columbia to these new markets in Asia. We're really caught in the middle of a global tug of war over these resources. And if we don't wake up as British Columbians and start being involved in this conversation and determining what kind of future we want to have for ourselves and whether or not this is the kind of future we want, this is all going to happen before we know it. And we're just courting disaster here, waiting for another tanker spill like the Exxon Valdez in Alaska, like the many different pipeline spills that we've seen recently, including this company Enbridge. It's just got one in the Canadian Arctic recently, had 3 major spills in the United States last year. And so we're putting at risk this whole supernatural British Columbia image we see in the hockey series, these commercials playing. You know, the Olympics was ostensibly all about that, promoting Canada as an ecotourism and a wilderness destination for people around the world. We have a very healthy wilderness tourism economy that provides 50,000 jobs in this province. We have the ability to engage in our own food production, to provide good jobs and feed ourselves in this province, and to do these kinds of sustainable activities. That's the kind of future that we could have here. We could take back manufacturing, create Canadian jobs instead of exporting our lumber and raw logs. But that's not the kind of future that's being designed for us right now. And I hope that, you know, certainly that's where my efforts are directed, is to wake British Columbians up to what's really going on and hopefully to take back our province.
That's beautiful. Thank you so much for being with us. I think that it's important that the first responsibility we take as citizens to be informed and to learn what is really happening and in whose interest is this government really acting on. How can people get access to your work and be more informed on these issues?
Well, you can go to my website with Rafe Mayer called thecanadian.org, and you will be following this foreign trade zone issue and all the other matters that we've been talking about there. So go to thecanadian.org and join our weekly email news bulletin, and we'll do our best to keep you informed about that.
Thank you again for being with us, Damien.
It's always a pleasure, Sylvia.
Take care.
Thank you.
That was Damien Gillis.
Straight out of the place called Kingston. Get to use them having fun. Throw with the knife, throw with the bomb, throw with the gun. I'm a spirit. For real.
I've been down for far too long. Till my faith was nearly gone.
Music's part of generation.
I never knew somebody just like you.
Did you hear what the brother man said?
Be a friend I could call my own. Let go of a broken heart. I let go to an open heart. I let go of my broken dreams. I let go to the mystery. And I believe in the miracle. I believe in the spiritual. I believe in the one above. I believe in the one who loves. And take one step closer to you. Just take one step closer to you. And even when I've fallen down, my heart says follow through. I'll take one step closer to you.
Tell them, spirit. Now my brothers and my sister, we not have it now. Tell them, say we going down to Ethiopia. I'm in celebration.
You know, and you never meant to hurt me too, but it seems like we always do.
Can we come in one step closer?
And even though I'm scared sometimes,
if I ever see you falling down, I'll be the one that's there for you.
So I let go of a broken heart. I let go to an open heart. Broken dreams, I let go to the mystery, and I
believe in the miracle. I believe in the spiritual. I believe in the one above. I believe in the one of love. Take one step closer to you.
Keep on walking, sweet
I just
baby.
Take one step closer to you.
It's a revolution start.
Even when I fall down, my heart says follow through. I take one step closer to you.
Yeah.
I'm walking, we walking up the streets of life. I keep on walking to you.
Closer to you. And even when
falling down. My heart says follow through. I'll take one step closer to me.
That was the incredible Michael Franti, and that song really speaks to, you know, the kind of community we need to build. And one step closer to you. Really, when we think about it, we live in a world that tells us we have to be organized according to hierarchies, that there's always someone who has to be the winner, someone who has to be the loser. And I think that as long as we play this narrative, we will constantly be working against each other. It seems to serve the interests of few, particularly corporations, when we divide ourselves instead of realizing that in many cases we are voting against our interests, we are acting against our interests.
We have come to the end of our show, Latin Waves. Latin Waves is a weekly syndicated program produced and broadcast from the studios of CGSF Radio in Burnaby, BC. The program is available free of charge to campus and community stations across Canada and the U.S. For more information about our work or to support our efforts, please visit our website at www.latinwavesmedia.com. Bye for now.